from KQED.
This is the California Report. I'm Lily Jamali at North State Public Radio in Chico.
And I'm Sarah Bohannon, news director here at North State Public Radio. Good morning. We begin today in the town of Paradise, which was nearly destroyed in November's campfire.
And yet, many of the businesses along the town's main commercial strip were spared by the fire. They've been reopening for months now, but they're having trouble adjusting to a drastically different customer base. KQED's Sonia Hudson starts us off this morning.
Paradise's main road, Skyway, is the center of its commercial core, and it is loud. Dump trucks rumble down the road while street cleaners scrub out the dust and dirt they leave behind. But Monica Nolan with the Paradise Chamber of Commerce says, despite all the commotion,
businesses are opening little by little, trying to pivot to serve the interim economy.
That new economy, post-fire but pre-recovery, includes debris removal crews, people living in surviving homes, and displaced Paradise residents who visit from neighboring cities. Bobby's Boutique reopened on Skyway just last week.
How's it going?
Kim Rickards works there and says a few people come in every day. Most are former Paradise residents like herself and are still traumatized from losing everything in the fire, so they don't usually buy anything.
It's hard because we all are kind of like afraid to lose our stuff again, but at the same token, we need stuff.
Needful Things and Antiques has been open since January, and worker Michael Van Gundy says business hasn't gotten any better.
It's boring. I watch a lot of movies. I mean, we get workers coming in and they talk and they just want to come and look on their lunch breaks or whatnot.
Van Gundy says the owner has been using revenues from another store he owns to subsidize the Paradise one, but he doesn't know how long that'll last. For the California Report, I'm Sonia Hudson.
One of the many complications Butte County has been dealing with since the campfire is the delay to the homeless count that's supposed to happen here each spring, as it does all over California. In 2019, the count has been delayed.
Yeah, KQED's Michelle Wiley spoke to the person in charge, and for her, this year, the homeless count is personal.
These counts are supposed to take place in January and are used to determine things like federal grant funding. But at the time, Butte County was still trying to recover from the deadliest fire in California history. So they got an extension, did their homeless count in March, and now they're slowly going through the results. In part because they know all eyes are on them. Jennifer Griggs is the homeless coordinator for the county.
We know a lot of people are looking for this number and this information. And since we did ask questions about campfire and some social services and things like that, it's extremely important for us to put out a final complete report that is accurate.
Griggs says it was hard to capture the exact number of campfire survivors in the count.
Many survivors don't think of them as homeless. They may be living in a trailer and that's their home.
But if it's not hooked up to utilities, it still falls under the Department of Housing and Urban Development's definition of homeless. Something Griggs understands because after disastrous floods wrecked her house in February, she falls under that definition too. So she had to fill out the point-in-time survey.
It was very difficult. It was emotional to take a survey and be putting on paper and saying that I'm meeting these requirements of being homeless, because I don't feel that. I just feel that I've got a home in disrepair and I'm just kind of long-term camping.
Griggs says for many first-time homeless, like herself and survivors of the fire, it can be tough to admit what's going on.
To even say that I am homeless and I may need some services and help because they don't want to be put in that category a lot.
Butte County plans to release the final results of the count in June. For the California Report, I'm Michelle Wiley in Chico.
Let's go to San Francisco now. A decision by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals yesterday upholds nearly all of California's sanctuary laws. The ruling could clear the way for more protections for undocumented immigrants in the state. KQED's Julie Small explains.
A panel of federal judges affirmed California's state sanctuary laws, including SB 54, which restricts local and state law enforcement from sharing information and resources with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Angela Chan is an attorney with the Asian Law Caucus who helped write the law. She thinks the Ninth Circuit decision opens the door for statewide agencies like the prison system to further limit access for ICE.
It
clear that California can just say, no, we don't want to participate in immigration enforcement, period. We're not going to use our local law enforcement or our state law enforcement.
The judges also upheld a law empowering the state attorney general to monitor conditions in facilities in California that are holding immigrants for ICE. But the judges agreed with the administration when they rejected part of a third law that would have required immigration agents to show a warrant to search a private workplace. The ruling comes a year after the Trump administration sued to try to block the measures. For the California Report, I'm Julie Small.
All this week, we've been hearing stories from white-collar contract workers in Silicon Valley's tech industry. Workers said they feel like second-class citizens and spoke about how the lower pay and the lack of opportunity to become full-time employees is impacting their lives. Here to break down contracting is KQED Silicon Valley reporter Sam Harnett. Hey, Sam.
Hi, Lily.
You know, what's really striking about the reporting you've been doing here is that we often think of the tech industry as a place that really pampers workers, but
right.
You found a very different side to the industry.
All the free food and the shuttles and the great pay.
The ping pong tables.
Exactly. The contractors are not getting that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't get the big pay and they don't get the benefits. They often have to pay for something like taking the shuttle. It's really a two-tiered system.
What are the companies saying about this?
So we reached out to 10 companies. The ones that responded were pretty clear about that these workers are brought on when the company has a specific need to grow a team or to backfill a temporary worker. That was the justification for the system. They said that the workers are never told that they're going to convert to full-time, that they're supposed to think of this just as contract temporary work. Google and Facebook talked about how they've set minimum floors for how much these workers have to get paid by the staffing agencies and that the staffing agencies have to require some kind of benefit package. Facebook did that back in 2015. Google just did that under pressure from its workers. Its workers, its employees signed a letter saying, hey, you got to treat contractors better.
Sam Harnett is a reporter at KQED Silicon Valley Bureau. Thanks for doing this amazing reporting, Sam.
Thanks, Lily.
Support for the California Report comes from the California Healthcare Foundation, helping low-income Californians get the health care they need. On the web at chcf.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.
And that is the California Report from North State Public Radio in Chico, which is turning 50 this weekend. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
I'm Lily Jamali.
And I'm Sarah Bohannon. Have a great day.